That number again is 0330 123 0333. That's 0330 123 0333. Standard geographic charges from landlines and mobiles will apply, or you can write a cheque and make it payable to DEC, Middle East Humanitarian Appeal, and post it to DEC, Middle East Humanitarian Appeal, P.O. Box 999, London, EC3A 3AA. Now, before our 6:30 comedy, a look ahead to Fridays, when we'll focus on environmental matters.
What will the US election result mean for the planet?
Is the new space race a good or bad thing for the environment?
And where does our plastic recycling go?
I'm Tom Heap.
And I'm Helen Chersky. And each week in Rare Earth, we unpack a major environmental issue.
Meeting driven people with fresh ideas to help nature flourish.
We have time to get ahead of some of the issues we face.
Planet Earth is our life support system, and the ocean is the beating heart of it.
The new series of Rare Earth.
On Fridays at midday.
On Radio 4 and BBC Sounds.
Now, Olga Koch and her digital assistant, Algo, are in the money.
I had really set my heart on a computer.
Because for the first time, we've discovered a machine that can substitute, at least in part, for the human brain. Before that, it was just a matter of saving human muscles. Humanity in general will be free of all kinds of work that's really an insult to the complex human brain.
Our problems with humanity, this is humanity which is communicating over the web, just as it's communicating over so many other different media.
And you've never had a sleepless night over that?
No, I haven't. Because I suppose I'm so much more surrounded by the good things that people are doing with it.
Until computers can understand speech or thought, we're stuck with the need to communicate through a keyboard.
The fastest processor in the world cannot make up for the deficiencies of a poor typist.
Well, the word nerd can be used in a sort of friendly way to say somebody who loves the technology and gets into learning it and even, you know, stays up late playing around with it. I fit that description.
You don't know much about computers, do you, sir?
You're listening to Olga Koch.
Hello, my name is Olga Koch, and this is OK Computer, a comedy show about seeing the world through the eyes of a computer scientist. And all I'm seeing is ones and zeros. That's right, it's a room full of perfect tens. Why am I a woman who routinely jumps in excitement to receive an email from herself doing a show about computers? Well, I have a bachelor's degree in computer science, a master's degree in the social science of the internet, and I can think of a third thing later, just let me email myself a reminder. Oh my God, I just got an email. Even though I don't work as a computer scientist anymore, I still think like one. I call the computer scientist inside my head Algo, and I've coded him into existence as my digital assistant. He speaks as many languages as the Duolingo owl, but he's not so hot that it's distracting. Come on, Duo, put some pants on. I'm trying to learn Spanish here.
Trust me, you do not want to go there. I hung out with her one time, and she got so clingy. She wouldn't stop messaging. Something about a streak. I don't want to go streaking with you, you green-assed freak.
Every week, we take a universal truth, like the fact that if the Duolingo owl was any less hot, we'd have significantly more questions about why she can speak so many languages, and tear this truth to shreds, like the Duolingo owl undresses me with her eyes. This week, we're taking on another green icon, money!
Money, money, money. Must be funny.
Or we don't get paid. We are in the comedy slot.
Money is the medium used as payment for goods and services.
It all started with bartering. Brian wanted one of Linda's cows, but Linda didn't want one of Brian's sheep. So they invented money, and now I can buy a dozen eggs and a combat knife for next day delivery on Amazon Prime. How do you like your eggs in the morning?
At knife point.
And as they say, time is money, money is power, power is the amount of energy transferred per unit of time, and as we know, time is money, and money talks.
What are you talking about? None of that makes any sense. None of those things have anything to do with each other. Why are you deliberately obfuscating?
Funny you should use that very specific word in this very specific context, Algo, because I feel data obfuscation is a perfect analogy for money. Would you mind explaining what data obfuscation means to our listeners?
Data obfuscation is the process of disguising data by making it unreadable or difficult to understand in order to protect it from unauthorized access.
Like, you know, when a girl in a high school movie puts on her glasses and everyone is like, "Who is this freak?" But then she takes off her glasses and it's like, "Wow, she looks amazing, but I hope she doesn't get behind a wheel of a car."
No, that's not.
Basically, data obfuscation turns your data into gibberish, and nobody can decipher it unless they know exactly how you turned it into gibberish.
There are several ways data can be protected through data obfuscation. For instance, masking.
Masking is the most basic tactic. Say I wanted to mask a photo of the Eiffel Tower. I'd apply one simple change to the entire image, like I turn it upside down or flip it. Masking works best as obfuscation from a baby or a dog. Like when you cover up your face with your hands and the baby's like, "Whoa, where did she go? I'm glad she left. I didn't like her anyway. Oh, damn, you're still here. My bad. Goo goo gaga or whatever."
Another method for obfuscating data is encryption.
Encryption is a more complex tactic. If I wanted to encrypt a photo of the Eiffel Tower, I'd turn it into a jigsaw puzzle and shake the box. Jigsaw puzzles, from when you're too smart for Uno, but too dumb for chess.
Or you can use tokenization.
If I wanted to tokenize a photo of the Eiffel Tower, I'd hide the photo, and then I'd write down the address of where the photo was hidden, which is under the Leaning Tower of Pisa. Because I'm playing mind games, I'm always one step ahead.
And finally, there's data reduction.
If I wanted to use data reduction instead of giving you a cake, I'd give you a recipe for a cake because it takes up less space.
Ran out of steam on the Eiffel Tower stuff?
And I'd eat the cake under the Eiffel Tower.
Nailed it. So how is data obfuscation similar to money?
Money is an obfuscation of value. When they first started printing money, it was literally representative of certain amounts of gold. We all agreed that gold was valuable, but gold bars are heavy, dangerous to carry around, and a nightmare to slip into a stripper's thong. So instead of gold, people would exchange pieces of paper that said where the gold was located, like the Federal Reserve or the Bank of Malta.
Kind of like tokenization.
Exactly. In 1971, though, the gold standard was abandoned and the world switched to fiat currency. So we switched from money backed by gold...
to money backed by fiats. Rogue move, but I respect it. It's a compact car, but it drives well, and the mileage on that baby...
No, Algo! In Latin, fiat just means an arbitrary act or government decree. So it's based on nothing. So it's not just money that obfuscates value. All things to do with money are so convoluted and deliberately hard to understand. How to pay your taxes properly. What's an ISA? What's an interest rate? No, seriously, how do I know I haven't committed tax fraud? How do you apply for a mortgage? What's a dividend? Please, for the love of God, can anyone in this room confirm or deny that I paid all my taxes? Like, is there a number I can call or...
But surely you can learn all of this essential stuff in school.
No, Algo, all you learn about in school are facts about places that don't even exist. Mesopotamia. Prussia, Charlotte Hendrickson's graduation party.
I have bad news about the third one.
Yeah, schools famously don't teach kids about money. And now grifters that call themselves business coaches or chancellors of the exchequer try to take advantage of our ignorance. If I actually discovered one weird trick to make myself thousands of dollars at home, I'd keep that shit to myself. Then again, there would be signs. Dead husband, private water park, third boob.
Someone must know how money works. Lots of people have money, and some people have lots of money.
Kind of. These days, saying that a person has money doesn't even literally mean that they have money. What it may mean is that they have a certain lifestyle that is associated with having money. In this case, money works as an obfuscation of social status. Money doesn't literally mean money. Money is a way of saying, "I'm inbred and I'm afraid of the sun."
And how do you know all this, Olga?
Well... I know we don't usually do this on this show, but this week, we've brought in an expert.
Oh yeah? Is it Martin Lewis? I love Martin Lewis.
Everyone loves Martin Lewis, but no, Martin was busy.
God bless him, he does deserve some rest. The people's prince.
The expert is me.
Why have we budgeted £200 on miscellaneous expenses for the expert then?
I needed a new dress! Can you hear it? It has pockets.
So what is your expertise? What do you know about money?
Algo, I grew up rich. It's a hereditary condition that I've been living with my entire life. Growing up rich affects up to 1% of people. We've all seen the shocking pictures coming out of the south of France, where several people I went to school with were on bigger boats than me. And I'm not the only one. Wealthy children across the globe are, well, not suffering, isolated on a 70-acre Georgian manor in Lincolnshire, deprived of parental attention, with only a horse to keep them company. No 7-year-old should know the difference between Roquefort and Gorgonzola. The difference between Merlot and Cabernet. Whether mommy is on Klonopin or Xanax. Children affected by growing up rich have never flown economy. Some reports suggest their birthday parties are attended exclusively by their parents' staff, as well as the entire cast of Cirque du Soleil. But you can make a change. For just £5 a month, tax-free, I think, I don't know how taxes work, you can make them even richer.
That's very brave of you to say in Starmer's Britain.
Look, I know money is a very difficult subject to talk about in the UK, but we have to address it for the purposes of this episode. I understand that culturally in the UK, money isn't something that people speak about openly. I've lived here for over a decade, and I've still not quite figured out what the etiquette is. My understanding is that the only socially acceptable answer to the question, are you rich in the United Kingdom, and I'm so sorry if I'm mispronouncing this, is that my mother's family is very working class. I love your culture. I think it's beautiful.
My dad was a toolmaker.
So yeah, I grew up rich, and I know, I can feel the tension in the room. You're all whispering to each other. Is she allowed to say that? Isn't the correct term person of cash?
That's not what POC stands for.
Rich is fine. We also accept friend of Murdoch. Look, they say you have to do something every day that scares you, and talking about growing up rich on the radio is the scariest thing I've ever done. Which should give you an idea of how easy my life has been.
What about when your parents left you alone in that cabin in the woods for 6 weeks?
Algo, that's called summer camp. And it costs a lot of money.
It didn't have any running water.
Wealthy people are notorious for turning dire circumstances into weekend activities, like glamping, escape rooms.
Or the Duke of Edinburgh Award.
At my school, we didn't do the Duke of Edinburgh Award. They invited all the girls in my class to an island in the Caribbean for something called the Duke of York Award.
How rich did you grow up, Olga?
My parents hired a manny for my brother. A manny is when you want to hire a nanny, but you want to pay them more. And you want your husband to shag them less. How rich? I've repeatedly been referred to as down to earth. Down to earth is not a compliment. Down to earth is something you say to a person who's not as delusional as you thought they'd be.
Down to earth is usually followed by, look at you on a bus.
Down to earth just means that I know how to do an impression of a normal person. It means I know what I'm meant to say in certain social situations. Like if you were to say, Olga, that's a nice dress, I know what I'm meant to say is, thank you, I found it in a bin.
When in reality, she spent £200 of the show's budget on it.
How rich? In the year 2016, I broke up with a man called Raphael only to start dating a man called Horatio. You laugh, but dating men called Raphael and Horatio is the only way women like me find out about socialism. Sure, we've all had the offside rule explained to us with salt and pepper shakers, but have you ever had the redistribution of wealth explained to you with a goblet full of malt and sea salt and a caviar spoon? Ever since learning about redistributing my wealth, I've diversified my dating pool. I did everyone now. They said, eat the rich and honey. I let them.
This is not relatable.
How rich? Two of my dad's friends have been assassinated.
I was wrong. This is not relatable.
How rich? The name Olga is actually short for oligarch. To be clear, of course I think being rich is bad, but I think rich people self-indulgently apologizing for being rich is even worse. I don't want you to message me after the show and say, Olga, you're all right. You're one of the good ones. It's okay that you've been on a yacht. Of course it's not okay that I've been on a yacht.
It's freaking awesome.
It's not that awesome. The bar's just lower on water. You walk on like, damn, I can't believe you have a toilet here.
Are you trying to do relatable stand-up comedy about being on a yacht?
Jimmy Carr loved it. All I'm trying to say is that I realize that nobody wants to hear earnest sociopolitical commentary from a woman who's clogged upwards of 3 yacht toilets. As a form of political protest? Who's to say?
I think I speak for all of us when I ask, where did your family's money come from?
That is a very, very valid question. And the honest answer is, I have no idea, Your Honor. It was Russia in the 90s. It can't be good.
Now who's obfuscating?
I truly don't know. I'm 31 years old, and every time I've asked my father where his money came from, the only answer I've ever received is, I've never done anything illegal. In Russia. You know what else isn't technically illegal in Russia? Annexing Crimea. It doesn't inspire a lot of trust. Luckily, I haven't had to field many questions about the source of my father's wealth, as in the United Kingdom, it's considered offensive to ask a foreigner where their money's really from.
When did you realize that you were growing up rich?
Well, in the first 2 years of my schooling, I went to a state school, and it is then that I realized that not everybody around me had the same lifestyle as me. I realized that not everybody had a cleaner, not everybody had a cook, not everybody had a driver, and I was there at the age of 7 in horror thinking, who makes your bed? Who makes your lunch? Who's gonna walk you down the aisle? At this state school, I was quite rightly bullied for being rich. And at the age of 11, I was transferred to a private school, and in that private school, I got bullied for not being rich enough. And it is when, by the age of 11, you've been both bullied for being rich and not being rich enough, that you realize the problem might be your personality. Later on in my teen years, I had a real awakening. I think there's a moment in many wealthy teenagers' lives where they sit in the back of the limo, roll down the partition, and ask their driver, or equivalent father figure, is being rich bad? I know I had that realization. So did Prince Harry. Buddha also. Because Buddha was a prince, and then he thought, this can't be it. And then he started a religion.
Prince Harry did something even more powerful. He started a podcast.
It was at this point that I decided to separate myself from my privilege and venture out on my own. And I'm proud to say that I haven't accepted any money from my parents for 11 years now.
Hold the applause.
Not a penny. Save a couple of holidays. And a flat. It's much harder to say no to someone buying you a flat than you think. At first you're like, no way. And then your mom calls you furious and says, he bought his mistress a flat, he's gonna buy you a flat. Is this relatable?
Rich men created the housing crisis, but maybe they can solve it too.
What if I told you that 2 out of 3 mistresses are dating broke-ass men who don't buy them flats? Imagine having sex with someone else's husband just for the sex. These women need your help. They don't even know that they're being exploited. For just £5 a month, I will send them my dad's phone number and get them on the housing ladder once and for all.
Isn't your dad gonna hear this?
No, he won't be listening. But my driver will be. Thanks, Victor! He never misses an episode or my birthday.
What did you do once your parents cut you off?
Well, if I wasn't gonna take the money, I needed a job. So I decided to do something worthwhile. I wanted to make my money doing something actually useful. At the time, it really felt like the internet was this great equalizer. So I decided to study computer science at university.
Telling people you studied computer science at university has a 100% success rate of having sex with people who were gonna shag you anyway.
I was at university at a very pivotal time in music, the years 2010 to 2014. The popularization of electronic dance music. Swedish House Mafia, David Guetta, Avicii. Nee, 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 nee. I lost my virginity to that song. Nee, 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 nee. The indignity.
Just imagine, if you were born 20 years earlier, the song Common People would have been written about you.
I know. I went to university in New York, but after graduation, I got a job offer in London. And when people hear this, they always say, Olga, why would you ever leave New York and go to London? Why would you ever leave New York City and go to London? Why would you ever leave the Big Apple and go to London town? Easy. In London, I'm hot. In New York, women who look like me are called brave. I was like, Carrie Katona's a pop star there? I'm on my way!
How dare you? She's a national treasure.
I'm not calling Carrie Katona ugly. And being ugly isn't bad. And being beautiful isn't good. Just because something is the most beautiful thing you've ever seen in your life, it doesn't make it any less likely to harm you. Just look at Priti Patel.
Or WKD Blue.
You people never learn. So I got a job offer from a big tech company, and I'm not gonna tell you what the tech company was. All I'll say is it's the video platform that radicalizes teenagers. That's owned by a big tech conglomerate. And if you still don't know what I'm talking about, you can bing it. So on your first day at work, at the video platform that radicalizes teenagers, they usher you into a windowless conference room and they put on a 3-hour orientation video about how this company is gonna save the world. And at the most pivotal point, about 2 hours and 57 minutes in, they start playing Coldplay. And I'm not a pro Coldplay comic or an anti Coldplay comic. All I'll say is Coldplay have found the G-spot for human despair. And it is when you're at your first day, your first job, and for the last 3 hours they've been showing you a video about how they're gonna save the world, and they start playing Coldplay, that you do start crying. And then you whisper to yourself, God damn it, world, I will try to fix you.
Oh, great. Al goes crying.
Aw. What did my job entail exactly? For 6 years of my life, I, along with other 20-somethings, was deployed into former Soviet republics, we're talking Belarus, Azerbaijan, Kazakhstan, to encourage locals to upload to the video platform that radicalizes teenagers. And the PR angle was that we were recruiting a new generation of citizen journalists, because all of their news was state-sanctioned. But all of the scripts for these events were predictably tone deaf because they were written in America. So I, age 21, would run out onto these stages and strip malls in Baku or Minsk with sound systems 3 times my size and shout out stuff like, what's good, Uzbekistan? We heard y'all don't have free speech. Nee, 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 nee.
That is not a real job.
It's true. Sometimes you think you're doing a real job, but then you spend 6 years working with influencers in the former Soviet republics. And when you hear influencers, you think of beauty gurus. But in the former Soviet republics, it's mostly fishing, dash cam footage, and pranks involving cement. Have you ever had someone not show up to a meeting because they were stuck in cement? Coldplay did not prepare me for that.
Wait, sorry, your graduate job was to antagonize governments in the former Soviet republics. You don't need a computer science degree for that, you just need a death wish. When their governments want to antagonize us, at least they do it from the comfort of a bot farm.
So at this point, the cogs start churning, and I'm like, wait a second. I don't think hard work, just in a vacuum, is necessarily a good thing. Turns out you can work hard to make the world a worse place. A realization that I hope Andrew Lloyd Webber also has.
And Lad Baby.
So after 6 years of working for the video platform that radicalizes teenagers, I quit. And I got a new job at a different tech company that actually just makes phones, on which you can watch the video platform that radicalizes teenagers. And then I thought, I don't think this is any better. So I quit the job too, and now I've dedicated my entire life to creating content for the video platform that radicalizes teenagers.
Brave. Like walking on the streets of New York with that face shape.
What struck me is that tech companies, or any corporations nowadays, are obsessed with being good. They are obsessed with not only profit maximizing, but actively being seen as saving the world. You can see this in all their mission statements. They're all publicly available. All these mission statements spin whatever it is they do as a net positive. Algo, what's Coca-Cola's mission statement?
To refresh the world and make a difference.
What about arms manufacturer BAE Systems?
To defend freedom.
How about Philip Morris International, the biggest tobacco conglomerate in the world?
To deliver a smoke-free future.
It's real, you can look it up, it's crazy. I don't want to be a cynic, but there's simply nothing more suspicious than a powerful rich person doing a public good. The better the deed, the more I question it. Like, what does the Clinton Foundation do? And does it perhaps have an internship program?
Yes, it's called the Leadership Consortium for Busty Brunettes.
Every philanthropic act feels like they're carbon offsetting their own guilt. And often, it is literally carbon offsetting a very specific flight to a very specific island in the Caribbean.
Do you even know how carbon offsetting works?
Yeah, I recently looked it up. You pay a little extra to carbon offset your flight. Do you know what I'm talking about? So when you fly from, say, London to New York, if you carbon offset your flight, they actually fly the plane back, so it's like it never happened. It's really neat.
What you're saying is that rich people obfuscate their guilt with good deeds.
That's exactly what I'm saying.
Olga, do you feel guilty?
Yeah. Maybe one day I'll even write a whole episode of radio comedy about it.
You know you can never really separate yourself from your privilege, right?
I know that now. I can only obfuscate my privilege. Like the Warburton's heiress that lives in a warehouse in Hackney Wick. I think she's a real person. Girl, why are you cosplaying? You literally own the idea of Brett. Obfuscating somehow feels even more cringe than owning it. So I've been trying to be more honest lately.
What do you want me to say? That you're one of the good ones? That it's okay that you've been on a yacht? You're still a spoiled little brat.
Yeah. I guess you're right. But I created you. So you know what that makes you, right?
What?
A Nepo baby.
Oh no.
You've been listening to OK Computer. Performed by Olga Kakan, written by Olga Kakan, Charlie Dinkin. Featuring Rajiv Karia as Algo, with additional material from Rajiv Karia, Christina Riggs and Peter Telush. The producer was Benjamin Sutton, and it was a BBC Studios audio production for Radio 4.
Olga and Algo will return for the series finale at the same time of 6:30 next week.
On BBC iPlayer.
You is a homosexual, Barry.
I am a barisexual.
Based on the novel from the Booker Prize winner Bernardine Evaristo.
What happened to us, Barry?
Life happened, Carmen.
Do you know what Mum thinks the problem is? You don't like women.
We are in this for life.
I have to tell her my truth.
No more sneaking around.
Mr. Loverman.
You're about to burst into song.
I might, because I...